accession number 23213, Wheel 7.
Major Potts, Wheel 7. When you occupied your possession forward, did you have maps of the area?
Yes, we did. Unfortunately, the maps of Korea were, majority of it was green and greeny mud. And they were not very good maps, and they were very, very difficult to follow. Many times I mistakenly thought one gully was another, and vice versa. We did have problems with maps and map reading at all levels, I think. Yeah, I think even the gunners found it difficult at times.
Were you able to use some air photographs?
No, I never saw any air photographs in Korea at all, to my knowledge. No. It was like a lot of things, you know, people say, what about enemy armor? Well, John Mull thought he saw enemy armor at one time. Did he mention this to you? He had his leg pulled, but he may well have done. But I never saw enemy armor excepting knocked out T-34 tanks. And I don't believe we were under artillery, but attack in the engine, but only mortar. But that may be wrong. When we got up there, we got onto the position. We were told, basically, that it was a division attacking us, which got enlarged as the time went on. I also, when we dug in, we bought up, we had porters. Porters were Koreans who had been recruited and as labourers, and they had A-frames, which was a large wooden A-frame, and they carried up our ammunition, rations, wire, and everything up to the top. Must be an awful sweat for the poor devils, but we did feed them. And during the day, we managed to build up a stock of everything and put out wire where it was necessary.
So, I was going to ask you where the wire was put and how you arranged it.
We put it down the spurs. We were on a spur, and I put it down the sides of the spur with a blockage, with a hole in it, so that we could get to the water to get water at a later date, if need be.
How did you lay it out? Was it put down in coils, or did you make a double apron with it, or something of that sort?
I think we just laid it out in coils, I think, across the scrub, because the scrub ground was pretty, there's nowhere like Korea. I mean, it's just horrible, horrible land. We didn't have a lot of time, either.
Was the scrub an obstruction to your line of sight?
I think not. We did clear it up to about 20 or 30 feet from our weapons slits, so that somebody couldn't climb, you know, come too close. We had lots of grenades, which the idea was to roll them down in front of us, which we did at a later part of the battle.
Presumably, the shale would make the grenades even more effective, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. Big Andy McConville, Sergeant Major of D Company, which was to our left rear slightly, I mean, he was actually throwing boxes of grenades. He had all the pins out, and he was throwing the whole box of 12 grenades down the hill at them. How effective it was, I don't know. Well, that's right, yeah. But there we are. Anyway, we got settled in that day, and just behind us on the top of the hill was battalion headquarters.
What did that consist of?
Well, I suppose signals officer, and the assistant signals officer. I think John Mole, as the EMF mortar fire controller, was up there. I think the IO was up there. I think the adjutant was up there. I didn't see them. I suppose about 20 people.
It's quite a large group.
A tactical headquarters, yeah. Mm. But there you are. That was it.
Were they all dug in?
I never went up there. Kept well away from it. Well, that was dug in. That was between me and the next platoon. They were in shell scrapes. Well, you know, not properly dug in, but they were dug in as best they could be.
What tools did you have?
Oh, they're just picks and shovels.
Infantry shovels.
Yeah, I mean, people may laugh, but. You can say, right, every man has got a pick and shovel. You can bet within 6 hours of issuing every man with a pick or shovel that half of them are missing. They seem to go to the loo and leave their shovel behind. And I don't know what it is about picks and shovels. I always found later in life, teach people that a pioneer platoon had 20 picks and 20 shovels or whatever. It never actually happened in fact.
Well, they're rather awkward to carry.
Oh, yeah, you used to shove them down the back of your pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there you are. That's what we had.
What was your means of communication back to company? Did you have a...
Well, we had wireless sets. Great wireless sets. Never bloody well worked.
What could you do then?
Shout.
Shout?
Yeah.
Within shouting.
Oh yeah, we were. It wasn't a very large spur we were on. I think it did work, but it didn't work very well. Radios, don't talk to me about them. We put out patrols. Some of the patrols, they didn't go that far. May have been, I think, up to 800 metres, but they were fired on.
Were these just small patrols?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, corporal and four or five. At evening stand to, we put 36 grenades down the side in old tins, old ration tins, took the thing out. We weren't going to go down there. We left a track to get water, but all our grenades a lot of grenades were stuffed into old ration tins so that they went off. Some of them might still be on the hill for all I know.
What would have been the alternative to booby-trapping those approaches? Would you have put out a standing patrol, perhaps, at night?
I don't know if you would have done there. Nobody ever suggested that we should. I think we knew that if the Chinese were coming, they were going to make a hell of a clap-trap noise.
You reckoned on hearing them then? On
We reckoned on hearing them, and there would have been all sorts, because it was a very difficult country to patrol. Where we were up at the top of this great hill to move at night. The battle continued, really. There was an awful lot of noise during the day of the mortars firing, the 170 mortars, 70 mortar battery, their 4.2s, and 45th Field, who had moved back. There was an airstrike, which we saw.
Who carried out the airstrike?
American F. Whatever they were in support of a Negro Ranger unit who were very brave, but there you are.
It sounds as though you had really got a grandstand position.
Oh, we had a grandstand position, yeah. I mean, we could still be there if there hadn't been such things as aircraft and you needed rations. We knew we were in for it if we ever left there, because the Chinese would infiltrate. They're great infiltrators. But then, presumably, you couldn't say to a Chinese staff college, you know, they're not indispensable. I mean, they don't mind losing hundreds and hundreds. But there you are.
Did you know that about the Chinese mentality and view of casualty?
Well, I knew that because, you know, we'd heard people talk of Happy Valley. And Happy Valley, and the soldiers knew. Again, it was infiltration in Happy Valley. And the majority of the people were killed because the Chinese got in and around them. War is never simple. People, even if you go on patrol and you have a quick 30-second firefight, it will be analyzed and everything for days afterwards. And you sort of say, well, I only have 30 seconds. It's rather like a ref at a first-class football match. But there you are. Anyway, we were up there, and we were attacked from dusk. And we were attacked day and night.
How did the attack develop? Did they try to approach by stealth and infiltrate?
Well, they did, but they brought buglers with them. This great business of the bugle. And they blew bugles. You could tell, they did on the ridge opposite us. And when they were, I don't think I'm going to go into every attack they put in. I just a general attack, and they did attack our position. It is well documented in various books. 18 times, I think it is. So I can't remember all the attacks. But that night they did. They were bunched on the. We put up 2-inch mortar illuminating bombs. And there were the Chinese, a conglomeration of them. So we fired mortar low angle, the Piat.
How far would the Piat go?
Oh, it got as far as them and there'd be a damn great bang. Mm. I suppose they were about 150 yards away. Mm. And our Bren guns fired incessantly, and they were red hot, the barrels. I must say that I didn't feel scared once the battle had got started.
What about before the battle?
Well, apprehensive, I think, because I'd never actually met anything like this before.
You had been in action in
Malaya. Yeah, but I mean, that was, it's a different type of action, really. And after the battle was joined, as I say, I was quite happy, and so were the soldiers, because they were in their slit trenches. And they brewed up in their slit trenches, which they shouldn't have done. I didn't mind them smoking in their trench as long as they kept their head down. Because if you said, don't smoke, they would have smoked. But if I saw a light, I'd go and kick them. I don't remember sitting in my slit trench myself. I was quite close to it. Hall, my batman was in the slit trench. But I kept going round my men, trying to encourage them. Some were shaky. I had two who were shaky, who decided at a later part of the battle in our withdrawal to surrender. And Ginger Watkinson kicked them up the jacksie. And they wouldn't move.
Were those two men, ones who went shaky, had you spotted them in advance as being likely to be shaky, or did it come as a surprise to you when they started?
They were both wartime. They were both reservists.
They were?
Yeah. I don't think they were very happy. I think they thought they'd done their share of fighting. I'm not certain what happened to them. Watkinson might have shot them, for all I know. They went to ground during the retreat, and he said to me, They wouldn't move, and I kick them, and they wouldn't. They'd take their chance with the chinks. But that's we'll come on to that later.
How did the Chinese attacks develop then?
Well, they came up the ridge, not so much our ridge, the ridge which was a bit wider to our left. They appeared just to come in a mass, trying to get up onto the top of 396 or 398 or whatever it was.
Just a mass wave attack,
then. Just a mass wave, I don't know, maybe 50, maybe 100.
Did they put down any fire as they were
firing? Well, they were firing, yeah, because they were. They had these wretched guns called burp guns, which sounded like a burp. And they did try, on the right-hand side too, they tried to burn us off at one time. They set fire to the gorse down the valley. So we told everybody to get in the slit trench and lie down. And we were ready. As soon as the fire went over, we were up, but they didn't follow it up. I think they thought they were going to burn us out, but they did no damage at all.
Did they attempt any sort of fire and movement tactics with one lot shooting while the other lot moved?
No, I don't think they did. They moved as a mass.
Firing on
the move. Yeah, and firing on the move. These are little burp guns. You've seen a burp gun, which is rather like a cheap Tommy gun. They. I don't think they had any fear. Perhaps same as Islamic militants, that they think. It may be Confucius will be looking for them when they come up above. I was absolutely surprised that they didn't, and they didn't even, when we started to withdraw, show any inclination to take cover. Or, you know, they ran at a tank and with a mine on a pole and blow it up. Same as the Japanese, I believe.
Sounds like a rather suicidal means.
Oh, yeah, suicidal. But we stuck on that hill for however long it was. And I don't think, I mean, we might have had one or two wounded. I can't really remember. I certainly didn't have anybody killed. I mean, by the following morning, the second morning, not the one after the day before we came down, the day we came down the hill, morale was very high. I mean, there had been rumours that one of our companies were going to go over to relieve the Gloucesters, but then the Gloucesters got themselves into a position where they couldn't be reached, and they didn't
cut off.
They were cut off, but. I don't know, it's not for me to criticise. I think I went up to the Gloucester position at a later date, but I'll talk to you about that before I put my voice to it. And we stayed there, and we thought we didn't realise how big the Chinese attack was. We didn't realise it was three divisions. And how serious it was. And then that morning, the CO came round and said, right, prepare to move.
What did you think when you heard that order that you were going to withdraw?
Well, it was obvious we were not going to get any resupply. I didn't realize the Chinese were round our flanks. I'm not certain the CO did. Because we were told to get down into the valley, where the RV was, to go through to start the withdrawal.
Is this on the same route that you used to come up?
Basically the same, yeah. Maybe a bit further to the left, i.e. a bit further down the valley, say 400 or 500 yards.
So was this because the form of the ground would catalyze movement?
Well, it was the way the porters had come up, and it was the way the other companies had come up, so therefore there was a path of sorts to go down. We collected water on our way down from the stream, filled our water bottles up as quickly as we could, and we made our way to the RV.
How did you go about quitting the positions? Did you thin out from the front or from the rear?
I think we bugged out pretty quickly.
Well,
not quite all at once, but I think, first of all, three platoon who were in front,
yes,
came back down. They'd had most of the fighting. Mm. Can't remember even the name of the platoon commander. And then Hoosenshaw Stewart came back with his platoon and went down the gully or around the top of the gully. Then company headquarters, and then me. I was last out of the position because I was, if you like, nearest the sort of route down.
So you were rear guard?
Rear guard, really, but we didn't have anybody follow us.
They didn't try and press
you? No, we got down. It was only when we got down to the battalion RV, down in the, by the road, that suddenly bullets started whistling around left, right and centre. And they really did whistle. So I went to the O group. And the order of march out was C Company, my platoon, battalion headquarters, porters, D Company and C Company, I think. No, D Company. Sorry, yeah. Can we go back again? C Company, my platoon, battalion headquarters, porters, C Company. Or was it D Company? D Company. No, C were leading me. Forget C Company if I say it again. It was me. After C Company, battalion headquarters, porters, D Company. B Company were in a stopping position further down the road, and we were to go to them and we'd all be safe. That was the sort of general gist of the...
What happened to the rest of A Company, which was your company?
They were behind the porters.
Oh, right.
Sorry. Anyway, off we went, and by this time mortar bombs were being lobbed at us, and there was a lot of machine gun fire, and there were spurts of fire on the ground. And we got back, and Sergeant Burns said to me, "Sir, we've got to keep away from the tanks." And I said, "Yeah, I think you're right." And he said, "No, for God's sake, keep away from the tanks. That they will draw fire, whatever happens." So I said, "Okay." So I told the blokes, and I said, "We're not going anywhere near any tanks. Not getting on any tanks. You're on your feet, and you stay on your feet, and you don't go to ground." And that was it. And off we went. Well, C Company went off, and then they started to stop. After not very long. Hadn't gone more, about 500 yards, and they all stopped. And so I walked on, and I came up on the company commander, who was acting company commander, a chap called Paul Docker, came out on the same draft as us, the captain. And I said, "You've got to keep going." He said, "I can't get through to battalion headquarters." I said, "I shouldn't worry about battalion headquarters. You keep going down with your company." Of course, by that time, he'd gone to ground. Bloody company had gone to the ground. And I said, "Well, I'm pushing on. I was told not to stop."
What sort of formation have you got your platoon in?
Oh, extended, very extended.
Extended pile?
Oh, extended left and right.
Oh, so skirmish line.
Yeah, skirmish line, yeah.
Across
yeah.
the road.
It was across the road, not onto the side of the... Mm. It was quite wide valley.
So you're moving... How many yards were
you moving? Oh, cut them well spread out, 10, 15, 20. Yards. And I told them that. I said, "Your worst enemy is the chap who's next to you.
No bunching.
No bunching. And it worked, but C Company were all bunched up now, and they'd stopped, and they were lying there. And I said, well, we've got to keep going. And he point blank refused to, if he couldn't get through on his radio. And he did actually say to me, you shouldn't come through my company. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm bloody well coming through your company. They had left about half a dozen men up the top of the hill who were wounded with an officer, Max Nichols, who's died just after being a prisoner of war. And I think they were looked after by the Chinese. Anyway, we pushed on, and I noticed that some C Company were with me, and I didn't mind them.
Stuck on to
you, then. They just came on to me. You know, they thought perhaps I was a better bet than their company commander. I didn't know them. Although only one of their officers got out, a chap called Terry Moore. And we went on, and we went on, and we then came to a small village where we had an altercation. There was a tank being blown up by the Chinese with a pole, and Corporal Bruce, we were held up by a house that was full of Chinese, and Bruce went in and threw a grenade in, and then went in with his den, and he fixed that house. I put him in for an MM afterwards, but he only got a mention.
Did he do that attack under order or just...
Oh, he did it spontaneously. It was
on his own.
There were no orders at this stage. It was, get up on the right, get back on the left, get me a Bren gun over here, or what have you. You know, we were disorganized. I mean, we had, you know, withdrawing in contact is the biggest, it's an impossibility.
Were the enemy to you on your way back?
Maybe sometimes 50, 100 yards. But these burp guns, I don't think, fired very well. But they did have rifles. And anyway, eventually, I said, Sam Burns, we've got to go up onto the left, because there don't seem to be so many Chinese on the left of us. They were pressing us from the other side, whatever it was. And so I said, right, we'll go up. And... up that gully there and climb up onto the high ground. And so away we went, and we started to climb up, and we were just, half of us were up. I was up the top waiting for my men when a whole group of blooming chinkies came after us, about 20 of them. And anyway, we got three Bren guns and lined them up, and we dispersed them. They didn't want to follow us from then on. I saw the Land Rover of the CO in the Northumberland hit by a mortar bomb. It had one of our wounded on it. He was killed, presumably. The CO of the Northumberland was killed. Another tank was knocked out. I suppose it was 600-800 yards away. And we got behind our crest. We left, and we thought we'd have a 5-minute break. Because we were pretty knackered, actually.
Were the tanks able to give you any fire support while they were
operating? Well, they were firing at pockets of enemy, but we had no contact with the tanks. I wasn't going to run up behind a tank and pull the telephone out and say, how are you? But the tanks were firing. Yeah, I mean, our squadron commander got a DSO, Henry Huth, and he really did deserve it. But then the tanks started to withdraw, and our rear companies and things started to jump on the, and battalion headquarters jumped on the tanks, and of course they were smashed off by machine gun fire. The porters came out. They kept to themselves, and they weren't armed, but majority of the porters got out. But everybody went for the tanks. That was where our casualties were. Anyway, we got up the top of this hill, we had our rest, and then we were joined by some Gloss... No, they weren't Glossers, they were...